from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. For 9 years, they crisscrossed Iraq in trucks and tanks and Humvees, fighting, bleeding, dying. Nearly 4,500 dead, 32,000 wounded, an estimated $2 trillion invested in the Iraq War. Now, veterans of that war are watching as Iraq appears to be coming apart. What are they thinking? We'll ask this hour On Point veterans of the Iraq War on the upheaval in Iraq. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you a veteran of the Iraq War? What are you thinking now? If it falls apart, does this war go in the Vietnam category, in a category of its own? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. A special welcome today to our new listeners on Georgia Public Broadcasting's new Atlanta station, GPB Atlanta, 88.5, and KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, Austin, Texas, welcome, and WAER, Syracuse Public Media in Central New York. We look forward to hearing from you all. With us now from San Francisco, Hien Man Tran goes by HT, former Army sergeant in Iraq in 2007, 2008, was seriously injured by an IED in 2008, lost an eye, suffered traumatic brain injury, spent 15 months recovering at Walter Reed Hospital. He's now CEO and president of Anvil Buildings, Inc., a construction company, HT. Tran, welcome to On Point. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
And from New York, Phil Clive, former Marine captain, public affairs officer, was in Iraq in 2007-08 as well, based in Anbar. He's author of the short story collection, Redeployment, that came out this year. Phil Clive, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Let's listen to just a couple of things here. This was over this weekend. The Islamic State of Iraq and Syria announced on Sunday via a web video the establishment of a Muslim caliphate in Iraq and Syria and declared that its leader was Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the current head of ISIS, here interpreted by AFP.
And so the Islamic State has decided with the elders and the emirs and the Shura Council to announce the establishment of an Islamic caliphate.
And they have boots on the ground where American boots once trod. Here was Fallujah 2004, recorded by AP.
Watch out, let me get a shot. Where they at? Where they at?
HT, you and thousands of others of veterans have been watching, listening, no doubt, over these last couple of weeks as everything has gone in this stunning direction in Iraq. And I wonder what your reaction is. We're not looking for any particular reaction, pro or con, but for the nuance of what a soldier like you who fought and sacrificed is feeling as, in your case, he watches what's happening in Iraq. What are you feeling?
I feel a lot of disappointment of what's going on in Iraq. We thought that when we were there, we were able to help train some of the Iraqi army and Iraqi police to defend their own territories or their own country, and after hearing the news over the last past week or two, it's kind of disheartening. I feel like all the work that we've done out there is kind of down the drain.
When you were there, did you imagine, after all those years of fighting with all the soldiers and investment this country made, that it might come to this? Did it occur to you that, you know, we some years later we'd be gone and there'd be an Islamic caliphate, Iraq coming apart?
There was a possibility of that in the back of our mind. Some of the Iraqi army and Iraqi police units that we were with, some of them were great. Some of them we just didn't have the great confidence in while we were with them and while they were with us on certain missions, certain training missions. So in the back of my mind, yes, this was a possibility, but that's not what you hope for when you're over there to help someone. You believe that they'll be able to stand on their two feet and continue the mission of gaining their own democracy later in the future.
Phil Clay, the investment in blood and treasure, as people say, was so steep, so deep by this country. What are your thoughts as you, along with other vets, watch what's happened in the last 2-3 weeks?
I mean, I think a lot of us are just reeling. You know, I met with a friend, another veteran who was just back from Baghdad recently, and I asked him, what he thought we should do, and he just sort of threw up his hands and said, "Grieve." I think, you know, a lot of us have been following the news very closely, and I think that the the deterioration in Iraq, sadly, is not. It's not surprised us so much. Like Duran, I was there in 2007. As a country, we'd made some pretty terrible mistakes very early on in the war, but we'd been very hopeful in 2007 that we'd started to find a new policy that would lead to much greater stability, and now a lot of those gains are just totally unraveling.
As we all look at that, how do you look at the sacrifices that were made? Are you in the camp that says we should have stayed, we should have left troops behind, we should be there now, we shouldn't have been there in the first place?
there are a lot of policy decisions that were made, and a lot of them were very bad, particularly early on. I think that, I don't think there are simple answers to that. Certainly, there was just a tremendous amount of irresponsibility early on in the war. You know, we as a public, we were sold a cheap and easy war where we'd be greeted as liberators. Nobody who was an expert in the region thought that was going to happen. There were plenty of people within the administration who said that wasn't going to happen, and we ignored them. And what a lot of the unraveling that happened is a result of that. And so, I think that ultimately, I'm glad. I'm glad that I went over to Iraq. I think that there was a lot of really noble efforts by Marines and soldiers and sailors to try and stabilize a country that we had destabilized. Clearly, what we did was not enough to undo the damage.
HT, do you see a noble effort that you're glad was made, or do you see something else now as events unfold?
On the same note, I think we were over there. We did our best. I was there. I was deployed from 2007 to Mother's Day of 2008. Our main goal was there to train, win the hearts and minds of the people, kind of get them on their own two feet, move forward with a better situation for them than what they were in. With things unraveling right now, it's kind of disappointing to kind of see where things are going. Hopefully at some point, the people realize that they deserve better and that they're willing to move forward and defend their own country. I'm still in shock and awe. I mean, I had a lot. When we were there, we actually lost a friend over there. So, I'm personally kind of invested in the situation that's going on right now. Also, due to what happened to myself, I like to see the situation have a different outcome than what it is right now.
So many sacrifices made. Can you describe what happened on Mother's Day 2008 and how it left you, HT?
Mother's Day of 2008, we were attached to a special ops command, and we were, just doing our normal missions, going out. And on Mother's Day of 2008, at approximately around 1:30 in the morning, my captain and I were hit with an IED while we were on the ground hitting an objective.
Injuries to both hands. Shrapnel in the neck and face. You've got a titanium rod in your left femur. You lost an eye. Traumatic brain injury. 15 months at Walter Reed. That's a long recovery, and you were far from the only one.
I was definitely far from the only one. But, this was part of my job. I understood what I was sacrificing. Along with these sacrifices, you hope that what you were doing gave someone else a better opportunity. And when that opportunity was not taken or was not progressing towards, it's almost kind of a slap in the face. Like, why was I there? Those are the questions you come up as you read through these things to the news. But overall, in the sense, I was part of a bigger plan. And, I was there to support the guys to the left and to the right of me. I had a job that I had to do, and there are no regrets. I just wish that, there were a bigger impact. I felt like the impact of what we were there should have been more, and I just felt like some of that has, or most of that has gone away.
To the extent that that impact isn't there, Phil Klei, this surely has to rate as tragic. I mean, the amount of money invested by this country, the lives invested by this country, 32,000 wounded, it's just unfathomable if the result is what? Nothing that was envisioned.
Well, and I mean, the result is incredible tragedy for the Iraqi people. I mean, this is a nightmare. I think, look at what's happening in places that we fought in, you know, the lives of those people, you look at the, you know, refugees fleeing the fighting and just the amount of violence and suffering going on in Iraq right now is just it's almost unimaginable.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour with U.S.-Iraq war veterans about what's happening in Iraq right now, about the upheaval in the country they fought for long, bloody years to take and stabilize. Phil Klei is with us, former Marine in Iraq 2007 and 8. Hien Mentron is with us, HT, a former Army Sergeant Infantry Corps, lost an eye in Iraq, joins us from San Francisco. More vets will join us in just a moment. Remember the sound that's come out of Iraq and around Iraq over the years? This was all the way back in May 2003, under a mission accomplished banner aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln, President George W. Bush declaring an end to major combat in Iraq.
Our nation and our coalition are proud of this accomplishment. Yet it is you, the members of the United States military, who achieved it. Your courage, your willingness to face danger for your country and for each other, made this day possible. Because of you, our nation is more secure. Because of you, the tyrant has fallen, and Iraq is free.
George W. Bush in 2003, the mission accomplished banner didn't hold up in weeks, in months. It was clear that didn't work. October 2011, here's President Obama announcing that the final 40,000 U.S. troops would leave Iraq as scheduled by the end of that year.
After nearly 9 years, America's war in Iraq will be over. Over the next 2 months, our troops in Iraq, tens of thousands of them, will pack up their gear and board convoys for the journey home. The last American soldier will cross the border out of Iraq with their heads held high, proud of their success, and knowing that the American people stand united in our support for our troops. That is how America's military efforts in Iraq will end.
Proud of their success. That's how it will end. Here we are, 2014, and it's ending a little bit differently. Phil Klei, HT, please stand by. We have veterans calling Michael in Austin, Texas. Michael, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, what do you think?
Well, sir, I'm not surprised by what's occurring in Iraq. I think that they were just biding their time, basically, waiting for us to remove the troops. And I'm not saying that had we kept them, this wouldn't have happened. I totally expected it to happen. And what really makes me very upset, angry, is just that I thought this 6 years ago.
Did you serve Michael in Iraq? When and where?
I did, sir. I served in 2004, but I was in a non-combat role. But I was there.
And even then, you saw this coming, that one day, whatever investment we made, this would come?
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you just look at the history and the politics of the area, you know that you have Kurdistan and the Kurds who have always wanted an independent nation, I mean, since the first Gulf War. And then we changed the whole situation with a Sunni minority and then the Shiites taking over. And
yep.
We made the mistake of de-Ba'athification, and with the Sunnis feeling like they have been pushed out and have no recourse. I'm not surprised at all.
Michael, we heard President Obama say in that tape American troops would leave with their heads held high, and there was a lot of brave service here. There's no question about that. But he also said proud of their success. How's that holding up? How do you think military history will look at the American military time investment in Iraq, Michael?
And I say this with all due respect to my fellow military members and, you know, the sacrifices
yes.
that they've made.
Absolutely.
But, I think that they will look at it as a quagmire, as another Vietnam. Granted, not on the scale of human sacrifice from our part, but I think the other thing, I think the captain said this, is I think what a lot of people forget is the negative effects that this has had on the Iraqi people. I mean, there's no... I believe set count as to the number of civilians that have died, but I think it numbers in the hundreds of thousands.
There have been estimates in that range.
That's a huge number. I mean, I'm not trying to belittle like the American servicemen or whatnot, but you
understood.
We talk about 4,000, and then compare that to 100,000, and that's something that you know we created that. That situation.
But so much sacrifice to try and make it better, and here we are with everything we're seeing right now. Michael in Austin, Texas, I appreciate your call very much. Thank you for that. St. Louis, Missouri, Toby's calling. Toby, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. Did you serve in Iraq, Toby, and what do you think now?
Yes, I did. I served in 2004 and 2006 in Ramadi and Fallujah, and now I really just feel sorry for the Iraqi people that I think that we abandoned them, and even though the war was costly, it's their lives that are being lost, and I think that it could have been salvaged if we would have kept some troops there.
Do you think American troops should still be there in significant numbers? For how long, Toby?
I thought about that, and I was thinking that for however long it would take, because I think that with the ideology over there is that they're killing each other based on their religion, but they're all Muslims, but they're killing each other because they're a different sect. And there's been other countries or other ideologies that have gone through that, like the Nazis. They were killing people based on their beliefs, and granted, there's still some Nazis left. They were taken care of, and now they're not on the global scale that they are. And so when it comes to extreme terrorists, they're killing people because of ideology. And I think that over time, if they would have been able to just been controlled and seen that they're just people, then maybe they would have gotten along a lot further down the road.
Maybe. But, of course, it's been centuries of Shia and Sunni at this point. Toby in St. Louis, thank you very much for your call. Phil Klein, please stand by in New York, and HT in San Francisco. Ben Colan joins us right now from Albany, New York, former Marine sergeant, 7 years active duty, deployed in Iraq in 2007, in Afghanistan 2011. He was in the Fallujah area during the surge there. Ben Colan in Albany, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What were your thoughts, your reaction as you saw ISIS move into Iraq and things fall apart?
Well, the first thing was disbelief and just extreme rage. I lost a friend of mine over there, and it's just the sacrifices that my unit accomplished over there, you know, just helping out the Iraqi people was just, as everybody else just said, just down the drain. I never felt so betrayed in my life just to have these people, you know, that I have actually met, shook hands with, had dinner with, and I would just leave them behind and, you know, just for their country just to fall apart. It was just a horrible thing to see.
So how do you think about it now? Should we have never have gone? If we went, we should have stayed in force in some number. It's good that we're out. How do you think about it?
Well, back in January 2007, when I had my first boots on ground, mm-hmm. it was just, it was surreal with the surge. And before that, we were drawing troops. That was the first mistake, in my opinion, going in with less people than we actually needed, and then turn right back around and send double the force we sent in with. It was, in my opinion, a military mistake, but it was just it was just one of those moments where, like, oh, I'm in a war.
Look at the Battle of Fallujah before the surge. It was a terrible battle. American soldiers sacrificing all over the place. Here's one unnamed U.S. soldier in Fallujah, now in ISIS hands, part of the Islamic State they declared over the weekend. Here was a U.S. Trooper describing the battle in the streets of Fallujah. This is recorded by the Associated Press.
We thought everything was clear. We had guys up on the roof, and went over there to go get them, pull them back with the squad. And another guy popped out, tried to shoot me, and threw a frag at me. Ran away from the frag, tripped over a little dead body. One of theirs, not ours.
HT in San Francisco, I mean, when you look at the speed with which things fell in the last 2 or 3 weeks, it's kind of astonishing when we think back to how American soldiers fought street by street, block by block in some of these same cities.
You know, you asked the question, how long should we be there? I kind of disagree with caller number two.
Yep.
I think we were done. We had a timeline. People of Iraq knew that we were on a limited timeline, that we weren't going to be there forever. I think, when we talk about success, there are so many success spread out through the missions of Iraq and where we were at. We were there to help out the people. We supplied them with some resources. We kind of helped build and protect on some of those villages that were in danger. There were a lot of many multiple success all around. Iraq as a whole, maybe the picture wasn't as successful as we thought it would be, but there were some successful missions that were going on, successful things that we were doing. How long should we be there? I honestly think that there was an expectation that we were going to leave and withdraw our troops. So for someone else to say that, we should stay there long until we finish the job or, be there to make sure things were okay, I think that the troops needed to withdraw so that we can come back. It was a 10-year war. There's a lot of exhaustion. A lot of guys have deployed more than once.
Yes.
Multiple times. Some of the guys that I served had already, when I enlisted in 2006, had already been deployed 2 times, 3 times.
Yeah.
You're asking them to extend out. And it's not fair to them. It's not fair to their families. It's not even fair to those people that have already lost.
HT, stand by. Phil Klei in New York, your book of stories, very moving stories out of Iraq, redeployment, has been compared to Tim O'Brien's, The Things They Carried out of the Vietnam War. Our caller, Michael from Austin, compared Iraq. He said, we will look back on it as we look back on Vietnam. Do you think so, Phil? When we look back on Vietnam as a tragedy and ultimately a failure, it kept us from going anywhere militarily for a long, long time. The sense of betrayal in the country and failure. Do you think Iraq will look like that? What are its implications for the U.S. military going forward for the country?
Well, I think we have a lot of lessons to learn, not just in terms of military lessons, but also us as a country. I think that, you look at the way that we went into Iraq and also the degree of disconnect that existed between, those who were serving and the American public back home. I think it's if you don't have a lot of interest in the wars, it's not surprising.
But so what in the end? I mean, I take your point that can be galling, but would it have changed the outcome that we've seen in the last couple of weeks if Americans had been more interested?
I think you need engaged citizenry in order to hold elected leaders accountable. I mean, it was no secret among, officers in the U.S. military that Donald Rumsfeld was incompetent as a Secretary of Defense. He was Secretary of Defense for years. It's amazing. It's amazing to me that happened as a country.
People kind of asleep at the switch, you're saying, while the soldiers were fighting.
I think that there's a lot that, a lot of mistakes were made. I think that we were too eager to believe in an easy war, in a simple war, in a war that could be waged cheaply. And I think that that's a pretty important lesson for us to learn. The degree of irresponsibility in terms of some of the decisions that were made very early on are incredibly galling to me because you're talking about Marines fighting and dying. A lot of Marines were fighting and dying to try and undo the effects of a lot of the things that we'd caused in the first place.
Ill-considered American policy going in, you're saying?
Yeah, and in the early stages of the war. And so I think that it's something that we definitely need to talk about and talk about very seriously, because there are a lot of lessons. It wasn't, you know, every policy decision that was made matters. It's not simply a question of, you know, once we invaded, not everything was you know, a fait accompli. And you know, I think that there were a lot of good policy decisions that were made at certain points, and there were a lot of very you know, serious efforts that were made, and there were also a huge number of mistakes, and we need to think about that, because the consequences have just been enormous, you know, for us as a country. But, I mean, God, if you look at what's happening in Iraq, for the Iraqi people, for sure.
And for individual Americans who served. And the cost, just enormous. Dustin in Milwaukee. Dustin, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
I just want to say, you know, I was there in 2005. I was there in 2007. And then I was there in 2010.
Three deployments. You know, that's a lot. Yep.
You know, the first time being, like, occupation, searching for bad guys, kicking in doors.
Mm-hmm.
Second time being like, we're training this force, you know, we're building an Iraqi army. And then the third time was this Operation New Dawn, like, you know, the elections, we helped do the elections, and we're handing everything over, and the war is going to be over. But one thing I noticed the whole entire time is that we were supplying everything. You know, we're supplying the weapons, ammunition, medicine, food, guidance on everything, you know. And I knew the minute we left, where were they going to get their supplies? You know, logistically, we were supporting them 100%. And just the people as a nation, I could just tell that something went wrong there a long time ago, long before us. And the minute we pulled out and we left everything back to them, that everything was going to kick right back off. You know, and it's heartbreaking, but our mission was to go over there, capture Saddam Hussein, and create a new Iraqi government. And that's what we did. The fact that they couldn't hold on to it, you know, it breaks my heart. But I don't feel like our sacrifice was in vain. I feel like we accomplished what the U.S. mission was to accomplish.
Dustin, we've got it. A very expensive accomplishment. Saddam Hussein gone, of course. A stable, unified, democratic Iraq, that's another question and very much open right now. Ben Colan, former Marine Sergeant in Iraq, H.T. Tran in San Francisco, former Army Sergeant there, 10th Mountain Division. Phil Cly, former Marine Captain, Public Affairs Officer in Anbar. Please stand by. We're talking with U.S.-Iraq veterans about what's happening in Iraq right now. Here's Taps, played at the California funeral of Marine Corporal Charles Palmer II, killed in Anbar Province in May of 2007. Nearly 4,500 Americans lost in Iraq, 32,000 wounded. Here we are, 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with U.S.-Iraq war veterans about what is happening in Iraq right now, about the upheaval in the country they fought to take and stabilize. So many lost. Army Private First Class Alex Varilla, killed in Iraq May 19, 2007. He was 19 years old. ABC News 10 talked with his mother, Rinda Pope, in Orangeville, California, later that month.
What they hit was an anti-tank mine that was exploded by the insurgents, and it flipped the Bradley over upside down. He was my baby. He was my youngest. Just being by the family, it's just going to be a piece of our heart. It's gone. It's gone.
And now, and that, just one of thousands. Here was Army Specialist Chris Dickinson's mother. He died in Iraq in 2005, roadside bomb. His mother, Lee Dickinson, spoke with Seattle Television, K5, last week. She remembered how she just said no, 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 over and over again when she found out her son had died.
And I just said, no, 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 no. No, it can't be. They all are heroes. They did their best. We did everything we could over there. I think we did a great job. We lost so many lives.
We're talking with Iraq vets today about how they feel about what is unfolding in Iraq. Phil Klei, former Marine captain, public affairs officer in Anbar. H.T. Tran is with us from San Francisco, former Army Sergeant, Infantry Corps, 10th Mountain Division. Ben Colan is with us, former Marine Sergeant, 7 years active duty, deployed in Iraq and in Afghanistan. Joins us from Albany, New York. And with us right now from Lafayette, Louisiana, Bernadette Frege, former Army Sergeant, Specialist E-4 Military Police, deployed to Iraq in 2003, was stationed in you'll tell us, Bernadette, south of Baghdad. Now teaches 8th grade in Lafayette, Louisiana. Bernadette, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
You were there very early in the war. What were you doing?
Very early in the war, we were actually spent most of our time in al-Diwaniwa, which is 2 hours south of Baghdad, and basically, we had come in after the initial invasion and were performing military police operations in the town there. Just a lot of patrolling and also some of the first efforts at training the local police there in our town.
It was 2003. First of all, did you ever imagine how many years and how many U.S. soldiers would be in Iraq, many again and again?
I certainly understood when we went that this would not be an easy war, no matter how it was sold to the American public. If you look at the history of the region, which I tried to familiarize myself with before I went, I understood that we would have to be there for a very long time in order to stabilize the country.
And how do you look at it now? We stayed a long time. We finally left. Now we see what's happening. How do you look at that sacrifice?
I think that our sacrifices, whether they were worthwhile or not, truly to how maybe Americans view them to be worthwhile, we still don't know yet. We don't know how this situation is going to play out in the end. If you were looking for a one country, Iraq, and that doesn't occur, then maybe you feel like your sacrifice was in vain. If all of this plays out in the end and we do have some separate countries here, but some of them end up being democracies, I feel like our sacrifices would be well worthwhile.
Even if it's only part of this ends up being democratic, even if it's split in three, even if there's, I mean, right now there's an Islamic caliphate in the north and northwest.
Well, I think that even if it is split in three, that is a whole lot better, maybe in the end, I can't say. But that could be better than what a lot of the Iraqis were living with under Saddam. And but that's a long ways away from knowing. And for us to have stayed there and stabilized, I don't think you're looking at 10 years, but I think you're looking at 20 years, 30 years on the level of the type of thing where we still have troops stationed in Germany and Japan, and we're 60 years past.
But those countries became peaceful. This country has not. I don't know. I mean, with Syria going on next door, who knows if it would have been peaceful even now? Who knows if it could have held together? Bernadette Frege in Lafayette, Louisiana, stand by. Another caller from Austin, Texas, Charles. Charles, thank you for calling. You're on the air. Did you serve in Iraq? What do you think, Charles?
Hi, Tom. Yes, I did serve in Iraq. I spent 28 months there. I had the good fortune, if you could say that, to be there in 2004-2005. And then 06 through 08 with the surge. I was a colonel at the time, so I had kind of a high level of what was going on. I wasn't really kicking in the doors. But my surprise at what's going on is that it didn't happen earlier. You know, we didn't win a war over there. We didn't settle any of the historic hatreds that's always bubbling up at the surface there. The reason we were able to leave Iraq, well, there's three reasons. The first is that we paid off the Sunni tribes in Anbar province. We actually paid people not to fight us. The second was, in Baghdad, we took physical barriers. We took these 12 to 18-foot concrete walls, and we divided the city. We actually created enclaves of only for Sunnis and onis for Shias.
Mm-hmm.
And the final thing we did was, well, we didn't do it, but the fighting was going on so long that many of the bad guys killed each other. So there was less people fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So there was nothing we did militarily-wise to actually win the war over there. And I knew at the time, well, you know, I thought at the time that once we left, this place is just going to implode. And that's kind of what's happening now.
Charles, as a colonel, you may be the highest ranking vet so far that we've spoken with today. And we're happy to talk with vets of all rank. But how do you look at this in terms of U.S. military history? How do you think we'll look back on Iraq? How do we ask soldiers to make the kind of sacrifices that were made there and then have this kind of outcome, which is so murky and maybe even almost the polar opposite of what was hoped for, what was described?
Right. Well, I think you have to look at it, you know, any soldier, man or woman, who enlisted in the military after 2003, they were almost guaranteed to go to combat. So you got to look at those 18, 19-year-old kids, really, that are enlisting. They are trying to do things good for the country.
Yes, but do we? Know? If we sent them into a you describe it almost as a doomed project.
Yes.
That seems deeply irresponsible for a country to do that with its 18 and 19-year-old children, boys, young men and women.
Yes, I'm agreeing with you, but I'm just saying look at the people that enlisted. You know, they were trying to do what they thought was right. You know, I mean, people were over there two and three times for years. It's not their fault. They are just doing what they felt was their mission and doing the best they can.
No, I don't mean fault at all. I'm just trying to figure out what this means for our country going forward. The next time, you know, we blow the trumpet to call those young Americans up. I mean, Phil Klei in New York, what's the lasting effect of this? We took their patriotism, their willingness to serve and die. And now we're looking at this vista. I mean, Bernadette says maybe something good will still come of this, and we hope for that. But it's not what was described when they were signing up in, you know, you name it, for a decade.
I hope a lot more. I mean, seriousness of intent when we invade. I hope that, you know, I hope that future administrations will be more careful to take in dissenting voices and plan for other eventualities. I think that we, you know, a lot less arrogance, you know, about what we can achieve, and how cheaply. And I think, more seriousness of intent. I think there's a lot to discuss about Iraq. I think the conversation about it is just beginning, and it's a very important one that we need to have.
You are,
and it's a much more complicated, you know, yeah, conversation than just should we have invaded or not.
Absolutely.
I think the whole course of the war tells us a lot about, you know, the ways that we use American power and how we should go about it.
Mark, Charles in Austin, thanks for calling. Mark in Silver Lake, Ohio. Mark, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. I think except for the fact that they were both geopolitical folly, it's bad to compare Vietnam with Iraq. Iraq is a country that never should have been. When the British created it after the fall of the Ottoman Empire, they had no idea what they were doing. And it's a country that was unstable from day one, trying to come apart, whereas Vietnam was a country trying to come back together. I don't think that there is any external meddling in Iraq that could ever hold this country together. And if it does fall apart and break down into three separate entities, and hopefully some of them are democratic, that'll have to be a people's movement from the bottom up, which democracy always has to be. But there's nothing external that we can do to hold this country that never should have been. Hold it together.
Mark in Ohio, I appreciate your call, but there sure was a lot of talk about it holding together, in no small part because people didn't want to see the slaughter that could come if it came apart. But we take your point. Matt in New York City. Matt, thank you for calling. Did you serve in Iraq? What do you think, Matt?
Yes, sir. I served in Iraq in 2004 and 2005 with the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that something that is worth pointing out is that this kind of idea that this is thousands of years of sectarian tensions is has a lot of flaws in it. There was plenty of demonstration that sectarian tensions were no deeper than Protestant and Catholic tensions exist in the United States. And things like our actions inside of Iraq, where Donald Rumsfeld termed implicit support of Shia militia groups as our Salvador option, and the fact that we then made IDs and minted them with, you know, people's sectarian identities, really helped contribute to this kind of what we're really looking at today, this kind of divide and conquer strategy. Unfortunately, I think that we're also looking at supporting obviously a very repressive government in Maliki that was responsible for putting down democratic movements inside of Iraq, nonviolent democratic movements known as the Iraqi Spring. And I think lots of those folks, there's lots of evidence that many of those folks have then now picked up weapons because they didn't have the option to express their kind of political will democratically.
It's complicated, no question about it. Boy, Bernadette, you can hear the range of opinions coming in from veterans and beyond, but lots of veterans here. How do you think we'll ultimately look back on this conflict, Bernadette?
I would like to think that we'll look back on this conflict with a lot of lessons learned. That's the key, because if we don't learn anything from this, if we rush into war again without knowing all of the facts, without understanding exactly what we're doing, and without, I forget who said it earlier in the program, without the American people being truly involved and truly concerned and truly being the ones who are making the decisions and making sure that their politicians follow through with what they want, then this war really, no matter what the results are in the country of Iraq itself, but for America, this war will have been in vain. If we learn, though, then maybe it was worth it in a way that we can't even see yet.
Costly lesson, even if
very
we learn
costly.
It. But Evan in Atlanta, Georgia. Evan, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just kind of wanted to say something on Bernadette's point. Our government really doesn't seem like they have learned from past mistakes. You know, we went through Vietnam. We went through the 91 Gulf War. I personally know people that we've buried over in Iraq. And, you know, I think the government went in with a lot of ignorance. And, you know, if you look at what's going on now, the same issues that were there before we got there are there now. You know, the Kurds want independence. You know, the Shia and the Sunni all have their own agendas. And I think that we were incredibly ignorant to go in there to think that we could, out of these three different groups with very different interests and tribal cultures, I think it was incredibly ignorant to think that we could make a democracy out of that.
Did you serve there, Evan?
I did. I served at the infantry in Baghdad, 04 or 05, 06.
We're glad you made it back. Many did not. Evan, thanks for your call. And one more, Paul in Des Moines, Iowa. Paul, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. My point to make today is just that I'm hearing a lot of people saying how they think it may have been worth it, how they think it may not have been worth it. The thing is, how we may have, your last caller just said we may have been just ignorant. I watched the initial push in 03. I served in 05. My unit took over Abu Ghraib after the incident in 04.
Wow.
After the Marines left.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine anyone taking blame for the situation besides the American public, because all the information was there that this thing was going to be a mess. But America wanted to go in, and we're left with the situation we are because they didn't take responsibility for it. They keep lumping it on George W. Bush, on Barack Obama. But in the end, it's the American public that needs to look in the mirror and see the person that they need to blame for this whole mess.
Wow. American soldiers talking back to the whole country in this hour repeatedly about the citizen responsibility, whether they're at war or not. Paul in Des Moines, I appreciate your call very much. HT in San Francisco, you're hearing all these listeners calling in, most of them veterans of the Iraq War. What do you think we should take away from this gigantic, costly experience, HT?
You know, as a soldier, you know, I was given orders, I was given command, I did what I had, what I was obligated to do. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, when it comes to taking accountability, I think that we're kind of blaming ourselves for what's going on. But we're not talking about the accountability of the Iraqi people, because if they didn't want us there while we were there, I think that message would have been very clear. No one wanted us to leave. Everyone wanted us to be there, stay our grounds, help them with what they were doing. Who's holding Iraq accountable now? Who's holding their people and their government responsible? We came in to do, to help as a supporting role. Originally, we came in for a purpose. We stayed there to support, and now we have to leave, and it's costing us more grief than what we came in to do.
Yeah.
And so my question to you is, you know, I heard you ask at one point, you know, what other, should we put more money and more resources? And I just wanted to end it as, you know, how do you put, what dollar value do you put on the life of an American soldier, Marine, or sailor?
It's Iraq's now. H.T. Tran in San Francisco, Phil Cly in New York, Ben Cullen in Albany, New York, and Bernadette Frugier in Lafayette, Louisiana. Thanks to all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.